Speaking of Missouri basketball coaches, we're delighted to have on Konzo Martin right now. Coach, great to be with you. How are you?
Doing fine, Frank. How you doing?
Very good. Now, I'm not going to get you in trouble here, but are you allowed to talk about your newest player?
Yes.
Oh, great. Okay, so tell me about the drama in all this, and you got the good news. Just give our audience the backstory on how this all unfolded, please, Coach.
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily drama in recruiting. I mean, just part of the process when you're talking about an elite talent like, you know, Jeremiah. It's just, you know, building relationships. And I think the part was, I guess, misunderstood was the fact that me being from East St. Louis, like it would be a cakewalk. But everybody's trying to recruit him. He's a very talented player. And we just have to do our job. We have to stay patient. We have to work like everybody else. And we just presented an opportunity for him. And I think it's close enough from home where he can have a great opportunity to be a successful student athlete. And we're excited about it.
So when you say stay patient, Coach, take us through this. Is there a time where you think, you know what, maybe we should back off a little bit and give him some breathing room? Because we always hear these stories, coach, about how relentless recruiting can be.
Well, I think what happens, especially you're talking about a guy, you know, 6'10", a big guy around the rim, those guys are hard to come by. And you're talking about a guy that also runs like a perimeter guy as a big man. So it's hard to find that within itself. But just in the process, just one day at a time, keep working. And what I always try to do in recruiting and talking with the parents as well as the young man is just try to figure out how they want to be recruited. Because it's one thing to continue to sell. But some like to be bombarded every day with calls, texts. Some players, they don't want to bother. They just rather be text messages. Some players like to talk on the phone. So you just got to figure out what they like and just kind of follow their lead and trust that it works out. And it's never a guarantee because, again, you have to do your job. You have to be patient. You have to continue to communicate. But not just the young man, but the people around him, just trying to build those relationships.
When's the last time you've seen him on a court, and what are your impressions of him strictly as a player right now?
Last time I seen him on the court, it was probably this year sometime. I'm trying to think when. I know I saw him a lot when he's a freshman. I saw him when he's at Lullaby. I saw him a lot in the summertime. Obviously, I didn't go to any high school games at East St. Louis Senior High School because he was committed to another program, so I didn't watch him and follow from that standpoint. But I've seen him play quite a bit. But just, you know, a guy that runs the floor, can block shots, great size, great length, a great spirit as a young man, a genuine spirit. Seems like he has a lot of passion, not just for the game but for people. Has a good heart, and I think with those qualities within itself at that size, he has a chance to be special if he continue to work.
How about Michael Porter Jr.'s involvement? Do you know if he was texting or calling him, or tell me how that worked out?
Well, I would imagine so, and that's part of the game. But the great thing about those guys, they had a prior relationship, so it's not as if a case, okay, me or one of our staff ever says, you know, Mike recruit Jeremiah Tim and say this, say that. I try to stay completely away from those things because you want those things to be authentic and you want it because regardless of how well Michael Porter recruited those guys and getting guys to become a part of our program, the most important thing, it has to work for Jeremiah Tim. That is the most important thing for him because each individual player still has to have an opportunity to be successful because I don't know how successful it would have been for Jeremiah if we had four or five guys at the position that he plays. Well, you can sell, but it doesn't matter because the opportunities don't present themselves.
Hmm. Coach, when will you get him on campus, and when can you start the reps with the jump hooks and the turnaround jumpers and really make him skilled around the block? How early can you get your hands on him?
June 3rd is when all the incoming guys will be on campus. June 4th is when all the guys will be on campus, meaning the returning guys will be back. And June 5th, we get started. So we'll go from June 5th to basically, July 28th is the last day of school,
Coach,
summer school.
You just inherited a program that was 8-24, and now the ranking of your recruiting class is 6th in the country. How does that make you feel?
Well, again, it's still a job at hand. Really, those are just numbers. I think the numbers you want to talk about as a program are the wins at the end of the season as you're going through. But right now, I think that's a number our fans can be proud of because that's just exciting times when you're heading into the summertime. That's all it is for me. Our staff has done a tremendous job of working relentless hours and trying to build a program to the level we think it could and should be. But for me, it's a job at hand. It's an everyday process, and it never changes my approach.
I know you can't talk about another player that could be a Tiger next year or not. I'm not going to even bring up the name. But can you tell me, after this Tillman commitment, does this mean you have one scholarship left? Is that correct?
I think what it means is we're never done recruiting. We're never done recruiting.
Oh, that's awesome. So, and then what's your summer going to be like? Working with these kids in June, and will you be running basketball camps? Tell me about your summer.
Yes. Well, we have basketball camps, and we have, you know, two individual camps at different times in June. We have an elite camp we'll do sometime in August. We have, you know, team camp June 19th, and that's the one where you can have the teams on campus. But for our team, we'll go, you know, 4 to 5 days a week in the weight room, and we'll go, you know, 4 days a week on the court as far as skill work, skill development, and team stuff, because per NCAA rules, you only allow 2 hours a week on the floor with your team. So we'll spend a lot of time with the team, you know, building the program offensively, and then we'll spend a lot of time in the weight room to get bigger, stronger, faster. And then the other part is just building relationships. We'll do a lot of stuff within the community, might even go outside the state some, and just finding building things and doing things as a team to build the chemistry and the camaraderie of our roster.
Good stuff. All right, before we let you go, I think a lot of people want to know, how do you actually find out? Are you in the office this morning and he gives you a text or a phone call? How does that work? Take us through it.
Well, I think what happens is just having a relationship and then the young man just really feeling comfortable. Because I give a lot of credit to Jeremiah and asking a lot of questions, as well as his mom and dad asking a lot of questions. How would he get better? What does he need to work on? And Jeremiah asked some tremendous questions throughout the process. And to give him credit, not just to make a quick decision based on the fact that here's a guy that's from East St. Louis. He had success as a high school player, and now he's a head coach. That would be the easy thing to do. But to give him and his family a lot of credit for taking time and evaluating and doing the best that he felt like was for him as an individual player. But what happened, just in the relationships, and all of a sudden he says, Coach, I have the paperwork. I'm ready to come. And he signs the papers. They come to the fax machine this morning. And he's a part of the family now.
And when do you get to take a vacation?
Oh, that never stops, Frank. I mean, that never stops. I mean, my family's still out in California, so for me, a vacation, going back to see them, hopefully in about 7 to 10 days to move all our stuff here. But no time for vacation. We're trying to build something special, so no time right now. So hopefully one day, but
Coach,
not right now.
Coach, congratulations. You deserve a couple of days off. A job well done. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me, Frank.
Well, it's our pleasure to welcome to the program for the very first time the new assistant basketball coach at the University of Missouri, Michael Porter Sr. Coach, great to be with you. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. It's great to be with you guys today.
Well, we really appreciate your time. First of all, tell me a little bit about your basketball background. I understand you played Athletes in Action with our mutual friend Lorenzo Romar. Tell me about a little bit about your playing career.
Well, I actually graduated from I'm from Mississippi, actually, Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Went from there. I signed to play at Wake Forest. They had a coaching change after my second year. I went to JUCO to begin with, and so that's how I ended up at New Orleans. Played at New Orleans with some pretty great players, some ex NBA guys now. And then right after college, signed to play with the now defunct CBA team, San Jose Jammers. And after that, hooked up with Athletes in Action. And that was pretty cool. It was awesome seeing a 35-year-old guy in Lorenzo Romar torch the Fab Five for like 42 points, and he routinely did that to everybody. Man, it was just the most amazing thing ever. So, yeah, that's where our whole friendship started.
Yeah, and that's the days when Athletes in Action at the beginning of the season would play all these powerhouses, and sometimes you'd go to Rupp Arena and play Kentucky, you'd go to Michigan. You had some really good players on Athletes in Action.
Oh, we did, and you're absolutely right. I mean, we played North Carolina, UCLA, the year that they won the national championship. Of course, Lorenzo Romar was an assistant coach with them by that time. But yeah, we went everywhere. We would sometimes play, 15 to 20 games in about 28, 29 days. So we didn't know sometimes when we were coming or going, we would get our sleep on flights. And this was back when flights didn't have to be all the way full. So we would always get rows to ourselves and just cash out right there and sleep, get up, get to the next town, and then go play that night. It was a good time.
Now, we know your sister-in-law has a terrific basketball background. How about your wife? Was she a player, too?
My wife was pretty incredible. Her junior year in high school, she averaged 44 points a game.
Oh.
Her senior year, she averaged 58 points a game, shooting 72% from the field. Now, I got to qualify that by saying she was the last class in Iowa to play the 6-on-6. So okay. She only played offense.
I remember those days. That's awesome. At what age could Michael start to beat you in one-on-one?
Oh, man, that's not a fair question. Come on. I stopped playing Michael one-on-one when he was right around 12 or 13 years old because he had progressed to the point, you know, he was small enough that I could back off of him and just block jump shots. You know, he shot it from the hip a little bit still, so I could stretch out and get it. But by the time he was 12 or 13, he had grown quick enough to where he could get it off quicker, and then if I lunged, he was gone. So, yeah, I remember I barely beat him, and I was like, okay, it's time to stop. I can't let him beat me.
So technically, yeah, Mr. Porter, you did retire undefeated against your son.
I did retire undefeated when we played one-on-one. But in terms of team, when Lisa and I would get out in the backyard, we had a full-size half court in our backyard in Indiana. And so we were out there all the time, and we took teams. And, you know, I would take the little kids just to include them and all, and Michael would have Lisa on his team, and yeah, they routinely got us pretty good.
I'm trying to think now, if he's growing up in Indiana, who would have been Michael's basketball hero? Was it Allen Henderson or Glenn Robinson, or who was the guy he loved growing up?
Let me think for a second, because he was an IU fan back then, and it was because of Tom Crean.
Okay.
When Tom Crean first got the job, he came to where Michael's team was playing. It was the Best Choice Field House. There were probably, I don't know, 20 or 30 teams playing in a little tournament. He stopped and he watched the game and he talked to Michael after the game. And so that's when Michael became an IU fan. And I can't remember who was on the team at that point. But, we started watching IU. And, you know, obviously, I would have to say if he had a basketball hero, it would have been Danny Granger.
Okay.
Granger was the guy for the Pacers at the time. Michael and Reggie Miller was still playing but they were too small to really grasp that the importance of what Reggie was doing toward the end of his career. So I'd have to say Danny Granger.
Frank Cusumano with Michael Porter Sr. on the Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan here in St. Louis. All right, I'm always fascinated about the process. I mean, we're looking at the almost finished product of Michael Porter Jr. and Jonte, mm-hmm. but how did they get there? What was it like at home on a Tuesday night at 6 o'clock? Were you out in the backyard or were you in a gym? Give me an idea.
Well, I've been training Michael since he was three. So it started early. Bree and C were 5 and 6 years old. And it was just age-appropriate fun stuff at that point. But as they grew to love it and love the games and we made it fun, then we started progressing and adding in more challenging drills. And everything at that point was about ball handling and shooting mechanics. And so Lisa and I had gotten a hoop that we could lower, and we got them all smaller balls with outlines of proper hand placement. The hands are on the ball, and so they learned at an early age how to shoot the ball the right way. And I wouldn't let them shoot three-pointers, and so that started early. And then as they progressed, and we saw that they loved it, and they were starting to grow. We were fortunate enough to have a friend who, again, it was called the Field House at the time. Now it's Best Choice Field House, but it's a spot with about, eight courts in it.
and he would let us come in for free early in the morning. So the kids, they would get up at 5:30 in the morning, and we'd be in the gym by 6, and we'd be there for an hour and a half before they started homeschool and before I went off to my job at the time. And so we did that for a long time, and you know, my kids have put, I can't tell you the hours they put into being good at basketball. It's been pretty cool to watch, and it's cool now to see also some of the fruits of their work starting to pay off for them.
Who in the league, or who have you seen throughout watching basketball over the years, do you think your son has something in common with? I mean, who does he remind you of? Who could he be?
Well, we've heard for years the comparisons between him and Kevin Durant. I mean, even when he was 8th grade, 9th grade, I think it was actually a KU guy who dubbed him Baby KD. And so that comparison has been there a long time. I think maybe there's a little bit of Paul George, Tracy McGrady in there somewhere. So yeah, those are the three main ones I hear.
When did you think, Mr. Porter, that this all had a chance of unfolding? Where you're back home in Columbia, did you know when things were not going well at Washington that there was a possibility of something like this happening? Give me your take.
Not at all. The whole change that was made there was a complete surprise. You know, we knew that there was a chance. But everything we had heard from Washington administration, and, you know, I had a conversation with the AD even before the season and before I took the job there, that, you know, it was good. Lorenzo Romar was safe, and everyone was behind him. And I don't know at what point that changed. I know he was meeting with the AD fairly regularly toward the end of the season, and you know, there were obviously changes that she needed to see, and he had committed to making those changes as far as I knew. And so, yeah, I'm not sure, you know, I wasn't privy to those conversations, but I'm not sure at what point she decided to make a change. And so us being here right now was the furthest thing from my mind. We were sinking our teeth into being a part of the Seattle basketball scene, and you know, it was short. We were there. I was there 10 months. The family was there 8 months. It was intense. It was short. It was a great ride, and we love Seattle. Absolutely love Seattle. But we are really, really glad now to be back in Columbia, around family, and, you know, watching what's going to happen with this program.
Tell me how difficult this decision is going to be for John Tay, who has a chance to be a McDonald's All-American and be the man, a special senior year, or a chance to play with his brother maybe for the last time of his career.
It is a tough decision, and there are pros and cons both ways, and we've talked about it, and we've prayed about it, and we've talked about it some more, and we've talked to people that we trust. And ultimately, where I landed as his dad is I'm going to support whatever he wants to do. I see great value in either decision, and if I had to make the decision, and this was, you know, a couple months ago or a month ago when we were talking about it, I was in favor of him staying in high school and finishing out and learning how to be in that position. Michael's been in that position a few years in terms of being the face of a team and leading a team. And there are certain lessons you learn by going through that process. However, basketball-wise, John Tay has progressed to where I do believe that he could make the jump. Now, it won't be easy. It's not easy for any freshman to make the jump from high school to college. It's going to be tough for Michael. It's going to be tough for every single freshman that comes here. But I believe with what we are putting in place in terms of a coaching staff, a philosophy, how we're going to play, I think John Tay could thrive in that as well. So Yeah, I don't know which way he's going to go. It's his decision. We are obviously giving him guidance and weighing in with our opinions, but I'm going to leave this one to him.
One final thought on that. The advantage of waiting on this to making your decision, how does that play into it? As a father, you get to watch him, and to explain that for the from the NCAA perspective.
Okay. I'm sorry, repeat that question.
Well, isn't there an advantage for Jonte to wait to make his decision after some of this AAU stuff is done so you can watch him as a father? Or take me through that. Am I wrong on this?
No, you're not wrong at all. Kids like Michael and Jonte do get invited to high-level events, you know, USA Basketball, McDonald's All-American Game, those kinds of things. And so they are getting to know other high-profile kids. And so when we as a staff are talking about who we're going to recruit and, you know, the direction we're going to go, every connection we have with a kid and their family is valuable. And so me being able to go and watch Jonte, you know, I can't recruit on those trips, and I don't. But just getting to know parents, other parents, as a parent, it can smooth the way to being able to recruit a kid.
Mr. Porter, honored to have you on the program. Welcome back to Columbia. We hope to see you down the road. Thank you so much for your time, sir.
I appreciate you having me, man. You guys have a great day.
Paul Biancardi handles all recruiting. All basketball on ESPN. He's one of the best in the business. He was a former assistant coach to Rick Majerus at St. Louis University when they just started to build a program that went to three straight NCAA tournaments. Paul joins us now. Paul, great to be with you. How are you, sir?
Frank, it's always a pleasure to be with you.
Well, everybody is ecstatic right now in St. Louis because of the news about Jeremiah Tillman joining a already star-studded Missouri basketball recruiting class. Your impressions of Tillman and what he means to this program?
Well, he means a lot because he brings instant size. He's a national prospect with a ton of physical upside, Frank, in terms of blocking shots. You know, at his size, he can run the floor with anybody. Tremendous at finishing inside. Got a high level of skill. He's a very fluid athlete, 6'10". He could do a lot for Missouri on the offensive end and the defensive end as he grows in the game. He's got a huge learning curve going from the high school game to the college game. And Konzo Martin and he are both from East St. Louis. So I think this is a perfect fit for both Tillman and much needed for Missouri.
And he strikes me as a guy who won't be a one and done, could be there for a while, blocking shots and rebounding.
Will be there for a while and should be there for a while. If he leaves, it's because he wants to leave. A lot of guys sometimes, Frank, think they're ready to go against the consensus, but he can play in the league someday if he maximizes his potential at Missouri, which should take him, you know, the whole time, at least 3 to 4 years.
I don't know if you've seen much of Jonte Porter, but I want to get your take because, you know, the betting line here is that he's actually going to reclassify in late July and he's going to enroll and play for Mizzou next year. What kind of player is he, and could the two of them play together at the 4 and 5 spots?
Oh, without question. I've seen Jonte Porter over the last year and a half. You know, I've been watching Michael Porter for the last 3 years. Jonte Porter, by himself, in his own right, is very good. We rank 60 players in the junior class. It's called the ESPN 60. And Porter is in that class. And that shows you how good he is, Jonte Porter. All of 6'10", very skilled, more of a post player. You know, Tillman and he could play with each other, for each other. They bring size. They bring rebounding. They bring skill, Frank. They bring skill to the front court. I mean, these are guys. Jonte Porter can get a basket for you. Terrific passer. He plays so well with his brother Michael Porter. So you're looking at 6'10", if Jonte Porter reclassifies, which in all likelihood he will. You got Tillman at 6'10". You got Michael Porter close to 6'10", playing the wing. I mean, that's a star-studded front line. The problem with that front line It's all young. It's young freshmen. Jontay Porter, you know, would reclassify up, so he would take the jump. It's a tremendous front line, but it's extremely young.
And educate us on this. If Jontay goes because of his age, he'd have to be there 2 years, or could he go and be one and done?
I don't have his exact age, but what you have to do is be 1 year removed from high school, so which he would be. He'd fit that criteria. And you have to be 19.
So the question is will he be 19 next June? That's the question?
Yeah, that is the question. I don't have that answer. Okay. I don't know his age. But if those two pieces fit together and he has a tremendous season, you know, at the very worst, he can test the waters if he wants to, you know, go forward with the process. But these are all, and I think Jontay Porter has that ability and time to be an NBA player as well as Michael. Michael's just advanced right now, and, you know, he's proved himself on the biggest stage with the best players, against the best players. He's been consistent, putting up big numbers. He has an efficiency to his game. You know, he's a special talent who's stayed aggressive. As long as he stays aggressive, he's going to be very good. There were times that he was passive in the past, but his aggressiveness has really come forward in his rising senior year. But he was head and shoulders, Frank, the best player in the class on a talent level, on a consistency level, and on a production level. DeAndre Ayton was very, very close in terms of talent. May have more talent than Michael Porter. He's headed to Arizona. Ayton just doesn't play with the consistency and the intensity that Porter does. That's the difference between one and two.
By the way, Jontay turns 19 November of 2018, so he would have to be there 2 years, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. In terms of NBA players, we always like to compare, and I know it's really tough to do. I heard a great, like, with Jason Tatum. I like that Paul George kind of comparison. Does Michael Porter remind you of somebody in the league?
You know, he has a little bit of, you know, he has a little bit of some traits of some guys. I was going to say Paul George is one because of the jump shot is there, and the skill level at the size just makes you think of that right away, and they're both athletic. You know, some people talk about, you know, I would never mention Kevin Durant, so I'm not going to say Kevin Durant, but, you know, Michael Porter can do a lot of things at 6'10". Ultimately, though, I see Michael Porter in the NBA as a power forward type. He's going to put on 20 pounds to his frame at 6'10". He's about 220 now. He'll be 245. He'll be a stretch four. And he can really rebound on both ends and make that three-point shot. He's terrific from the foul line. And he'll beat bigger guys off the bounce at that next level. From Missouri, he can play the wing, or he can play in the post. He can play anywhere he wants and be highly productive. I've always liked him to Paul George.
Do you like any of these other recruits, Roberts or Blake Harris? Any of those guys could have an immediate impact?
You know, I do like them. I'll tell you where Blake Harris is going to be really good, Frank. Watch him pass the ball. Terrific passer. One of the top 5 to 7 passers in the senior class. So he can facilitate. He'll find guys. He'll run the show. He was going to Washington, part of that top class that Michael Porter was part of. So I like Blake Harris a lot in terms of running the fast break and helping them facilitate offense in the half court. C.J. Roberts, really speedy and quick on the ball. He'll be that transition player that will help give them depth in the backcourt. And you have Terrence Phillips coming back, so he's battle-tested. Jordan Barnett, the transfer from Texas, should be older, better, and stronger. So it's starting to come together for Missouri.
So I know it's tough to put a win total, but that's got to be an NCAA kind of NCAA tournament team, correct?
I'm not going to go that far. I'll say this. They'll have more than 8 wins.
All right, that's good.
How's that?
That's good.
That's being bold. That's bold, Frank. I'm being bold.
A slew. I know I've asked you about this before, but the 4 transfers, if you add the young man from Boston College and then the 2 high schoolers, how dramatically different is that team going to be?
Oh, that's another team that's really on its way up in SLU. So when you look at the 2 coaches with Travis Ford and Konzo Martin, I mean, there's a reason to be excited in the state of Missouri when it comes to basketball. SLU will be dramatically different. And, you know, they have a kid coming in the future, Cartier Gordon. I don't know if you're familiar with that name.
Yep.
But he's in our top 10 right now, and where he'll finish, we don't know in the class, but he'll be a McDonald's All-American type in the future. But when you look at the kids that were coming in right away this year, Jordan Goodwin and Hassan French, they impact from a physical standpoint. They're both rough. They're both tough. They have college-ready bodies. They're battle-tested. They've played on the highest level circuit, the Nike EYBL, and they've produced at a high level. I see those guys, immediate starters and impact players at SLU.
What about Illinois, the other prominent Division I school in our region? They got Mark Smith, the really good player from Edwardsville, who kind of blew up late. What about Brad Underwood's squad?
Well, Brad Underwood, I mean, what he did in Oklahoma State, I thought in 1 year was somewhat of a minor miracle. But when you look at their 217 class, Demonte Williams, he's an ESPN top 100 player. Mark Smith came on. I know a lot of people in Chicago, outside the area, Edwardsville High School, thought he was a top 100. He's on that border. He's that good. And Trent Frazier, don't forget about him, the point guard down in Florida. Speedy, quick, can shoot it. So they come in with a trio of guards that I think will help right away. And, you know, Brad's got to establish his way, his culture, you know, his atmosphere. But as far as a freshman class, that's a really good freshman class to work with.
I want to get quick some NBA draft thoughts. I know that the lottery has not been set, but if Boston gets the number one pick and they have Isaiah Thomas, you think there's a chance they'd go forward and take a guy like Jason Tatum with the number one pick in the draft?
You know, with Isaiah Thomas, I mean, he's a great scoring point guard. So do you need Markelle Fultz? You probably don't need Fultz, though he's a phenomenal talent. You think about it for just a second, Frank. What about Lonzo Ball at 6'6", and then Isaiah and him in the backcourt? That, to me, is a tremendous backcourt because Ball will, you know, just facilitate it at a different level. But I think that you could look at Tatum. I think another guy that the Celtics may have to look at is Malik Monk. And I know that may sound – there's going to be a lot of guys talked about for the first five spots, but Monk can really stroke it. And when you look at the Celtics and their ability to shoot the ball in the backcourt, Marcus Smart, Avery Bradley, great defenders, great team players, not great shooters – and Monk could just be a guy who could just open up the floor. So Tatum, absolutely a possibility because, you know, he can shoot it from mid-range so well. He's a mismatch problem. Don't know he'll be that much of a mismatch in the NBA, but he'll be a guy that you can move around because of his versatility. He's played the four spot at Duke at small ball. So, you know, he can play a three, and maybe if he puts on 20 pounds, he can play a four spot as well in the NBA. Certainly can play on the perimeter. So a lot of choices. Tatum, Monk. I think the Celtics need guys who can score.
You know, I want Tatum to succeed the most because he's a local kid. I know he's going to be great. But if I had to to lay down a dollar bet right now of all the people in this draft who I think are going to score and be the best NBA players, the one guy that I'd be guaranteed of, this guy will be a star, would be that De'Aaron Fox. I keep going back to that performance against Ball when he had him for lunch in the NCAA tournament. Man, that guy is unbelievable.
Well, there you go. There's another point guard. I mean, we can talk about this draft is so point guard strong and heavy. When you draft in one, what do you want? You want a difference maker, a franchise player? And right now, you know, the buzz and from my eye test is a Markelle Fultz and is a Lonzo Ball. Those guys, in my mind, are difference makers. And I really like Malik Monk. I mean, for his ability to shoot it with size. And we saw the numbers he put up for Kentucky, but the range and accuracy, his NBA three-point shot is easy. And he defends, and he's very, very explosive and athletic. And then Jason's right there, not the athlete, but taller. And as you talked about, he scores. He's productive. He has versatility. He can score in different ways. Not the most athletic guy on the roster, but a guy who has a high basketball IQ and a tremendous work ethic, as does Monk, Ball,
and Fultz.
You know, when Harry Giles, the kid from Duke, announced that he was going to the draft, I thought that's the most insane thing I've ever heard. The guy did absolutely nothing because of a variety of injuries. He didn't get a whole lot of playing time, did very little. And yet I'm looking at these mock drafts, and he's a top 20 or top 25 pick. So maybe he's going to laugh us all to the bank.
Well, what's going to happen, he's going to get drafted on based on what he was out of high school. And when I watched him, that's rising senior year, that summer before, okay, April, May, June, July, August, he dominated the competition. I mean, you knew he was the best player on the court every game. And there were guys like Jason Tatum and Fox and Monk that were great as well. But Giles stood out with his shot blocking, rebounding, energy, scoring ability, you know, inside of about 10 feet, 15 feet. And then, you know, then the injury came about in the fall, and he had prior injuries. So I've seen him at his best. Don't know where he is physically right now, but somebody will draft him, Frank, because he's still young and what he's done in the past. And if he can stay healthy, they got to steal at 20 or 25, wherever he's going to get drafted.
Great stuff. We really appreciate it. What's your next big events to cover? Where will you be in the near future?
Every weekend I'm at a different event. This weekend I'll be at the there's a tournament called the Big Shots Tournament in Baltimore, Maryland, where 60 teams will be there, and I'll scout those teams and evaluate the talent. And then from there I go to just different events throughout the country, different camps, and then we cap it all off in the summer. We have games on ESPNU, from the Peach Jam, from Adidas, from the Under Armour Elite 24. So we cover high school basketball. We rank them, we grade them, and evaluate them. And hopefully we're right more than we're wrong.
Honored to have you on the program, sir. Love your work, Paul. Thanks so much.
All right, Frank. Thanks for having me.
And joining us now is Norm Stewart. Coach, great to be with you. How are you?
I'm fine, Frankie. How are you?
Real good. Well, how did you hear the news, and give me your reaction when you heard it?
Well, you're challenging 82-year-old man's thought process.
When did you find out?
Well, you know, Gary Link, of course, was an outstanding player for me. And I think that he has been one of the leaders in this. And he called me a few weeks ago, and gave me the information as to what they were planning on doing.
Well,
that's how I heard about it. And then the latest part of it is, I got to be quite honest with you, Frank. I'm obviously gratified, pleased. Our families thinks it's wonderful. But right now, the crisis in our family is that my wife had to have a surgery, and we're going through that, and that hasn't been pleasant, and so we're concentrating on that. But I'm glad to talk to you. When they said that you were the one that wanted to interview, I was happy to do it, because you've been special. You've been there a long time, and you're a great player yourself, and so, and now you do a great job, and it's great for me to be able to talk to you.
Well, I'm sorry I didn't know about your wife. I mean, we'll all be praying for her. Can you tell us anything? Is she doing okay and fighting the battle?
Well, shoulders replacement. And anytime, you know, people, you get a certain age and you start having the replacements, the knee is one that they've gotten down pretty good. The hip is, of all of them, none of them are pleasant, but the shoulder is the one I think that offers the most difficult situation. But anyway, that's what we have. And she had a fall, and the result is the shoulder replacement. So we're going through that, and thank you for your thoughts, and we're going to get through that.
Well, you know, we just passed Mother's Day, and anybody that knows Norm Stewart well knows that the love of his life has always been Virginia Stewart, who's just been by your side for probably 60 years now. Give me an idea what she's meant to you.
Well, they should put the statue of her instead of me. Great gal. We met we met here at school, and you hit it right on the nose. We've been together. We've been married 60 years, been together 62, and somebody asked me the other day, said, what's the secret of that? And both of us looked at one another, and we said, keep fighting. But it's been a wonderful 60 years, and we've had just a great time together and still do and still planning on a lot more.
We're talking with Norm Stewart, who was inducted into the College Basketball Hall of Fame in 2007 and won 731 games in his career. I got to ask you, there's a lot of excitement. In fact, it's the most excitement for a Missouri basketball program since some of your great teams right now with what Konzo has done. What are your impressions of Konzo Martin in the early stages of his career at Mizzou?
Well, you know, Kim Anderson came in here and took on the chore of cleaning up the place, and he got that done. And I'll cover that first. The sad thing about that is this will not go on his resume. What's going to go on his resume is the fact that he didn't win very many ball games in the 3 years that he was here. What should go on there is that he's made it possible. And I kind of think of something like this. The assistant coach, we made it possible for the assistant coach, I say we, the older group, the group before me made it possible to have a better job, and I've helped make it possible for the other guys to have a better job. Konzo is coming in, and I tell everybody he's got to be somewhat okay or sane, but he's probably got a dent in his head, too, because he played for Katy. You know, he played for Gene up at Purdue. He's been at three places. He's been at Missouri State 3 years, and he went to Tennessee for 3 years, and he was at California 3 years. And so he's been successful. He's come in, and, of course, gangbuster year on recruiting. And so everybody's excited about that, which is good. But I will say the groundwork was set by Kim Anderson. And as I said, that's not going to be on his resume, but that's the guy that did it for Konzo. And I think Konzo now has got an opportunity with the recruiting and so on to have some great years.
You know, he mentioned you at that initial press conference that you were one of the people he admired most in college coaching, and he said that you actually recruited him. Do you remember him at Lincoln High School?
Well, I do and I don't. He was in here on a recruiting visit, and I don't guess we had as much money as Katy at Purdue, so... Not really. Gene Katy used to coach at Hutch Junior College, and he used to come through here on his way to play Moberly. And I would take his team, and I didn't pay for it, but because we didn't have any money, and still don't. But anyway, we would take his team out to eat, and so I told Katy one time, I said, listen, you got better players at Hutch Junior College than I do at the University of Missouri, and I'm letting you eat here. I'm letting you practice here. Surely you can think about dropping one of those guys off. But Katie's a great guy. Konzo, again, had the good fortune of being around him, and so I think that there'll be some good runoff. And then Quanzo's proven himself on his own, so... It should be a good match.
Hey, Coach, tell the story about how you didn't want to spend a single penny in the state of Kansas when Missouri would go there.
Well, like a lot of stories, I got to tell you this. Last night I watched Bob Gibson and Tim McCarver, and boy, it makes a guy feel good because that's the way it was, and. There's still a lot of good things going on like that, but what a treat that was. But, okay, now see.
On Kansas.
You got me again.
No, on Kansas.
Okay, Kansas, all right. There was a lieutenant governor named Bill Morris, And Bill and I became friends because of his position, my position. And we were visiting one time about people spending money outside the state from the government. In other words, they'd put it on bid, and somebody outside of Missouri would get the bid. He said, if you're close, my contention is that that bid should stay in Missouri. And I kind of remembered that. It made sense to me. And so I'm over in Kansas, and we won the game, and I did not stay in Lawrence. I stayed in Kansas City, and one of the writers had noticed that, and he said, Coach, you didn't stay in Lawrence last night. Why didn't you stay here? And so the whole thing came to me that Morris was talking about spending money outside the state, and that just came out. And I said, well, I don't spend any money. I wouldn't spend a dime in Kansas. And so that stuck with it. The great thing for me, Frankie, was this, is that anytime I got in trouble in a conversation about Kansas, I'd say, well, you know, I'm not going to spend any money over here, so ask me something else, you know? And so I could divert you guys for a little while.
Hey, what do you think of Bill Self not wanting to play Missouri in basketball anymore?
Well, first of all, Bill Self was a heck of a player and is a tremendous coach, one of the best in the country, one of the great coaches at Kansas. Good friend. He's in a situation that's a great rivalry, and I'm dancing a line here because I put myself in Bill Self's position, and I do the same thing he's doing. Because Kansas wasn't the one that caused Missouri to leave. They left of their own volition. And so Missouri, to me, is the one that has to entertain the other side into playing. To me, it's a little bit more onus on Missouri than there is on Kansas to play. And I would think that at some point in time that Bill... Coach Self will probably come to that meeting, or they'll all come to that meeting. And quite honestly, everything today seems to be financial. And the financial reward for that being played would be tremendous. So I think you probably will see that game being played at some point in time.
You know, the other
they'll
day
play it at, they'll play it at Allen, what we called Allen Fieldhouse East. That's in Kansas City.
Well played. The other day, Phil Bradley got an honor here in the St. Louis area, and we put together just like a Mount Rushmore of Mizzou sports, and Bradley would definitely be on it. And what you did, winning the games, people don't realize what a great baseball player you were. You averaged 24 one year in basketball. You would be on it. Maybe Brad Smith. And the guy that I insisted that be on it would be Steve Stepanovich. And I know you coached some great players, but in terms of most important players in the history of your career, you know, we got to remember the 2 years before he got there, Mizzou had kind of off seasons, even though you had success before, but you were 14, 16, 13, 15. And then Steve arrives, Sunvold comes with him, and you win 100, four straight Big Eight titles, and you're set for years and years. Is he the most important player you ever coached in your program?
Yeah, let's get that covered. Yes, the answer to that question. But what you do is go back to what I said about Kim Anderson setting the table for Quanzo. David Pike set the table. He was a little player, and he's gone now, bless him. He's gone, but he was a junior college player that from Crowder, and I recruited him. John Brown was the first outstanding kind of national recruit that came here. Kim Anderson came right after him. Willie Smith was in that group. Jimmy Kennedy, those guys were prominent players and won championships in their time and went deep in the NC2A. They set the table so that I could recruit Steve Stepanovich. And, of course, we didn't have any competition for Stepo. His top five schools were Kentucky, North Carolina, UCLA, and Notre Dame, and Missouri. And I will tell you, I relay a telephone call I had. Dean Smith called me and said, Norm, are you going to get Stipo? And, or Stepanov, of course, he went Stipo Stepanovich. I said, well, we've gotten every major player to this point in the state of Missouri. And I said, I'm assuming I'm going to do that. And he said, well, that's what I think. And so he said, I'm going to help you because I don't want to play against him.
Huh. That's very nice of him.
Yeah, yeah. And so anyway, but Stipo, you know, if we had a recruiting book on Stipo, and we followed it religiously for 2 or 3 years. But a great individual, never took advantage of being the best player, the biggest player, the most outstanding player, not only at Missouri, but in the league. Never took advantage of that. I mean, he was one of the guys, if you were going to run, he ran. You know, he'd run a little more than what everybody else, or he'd run, try to run faster or whatever. Never was selfish. You know, he could have scored another 500 points probably, or maybe more. But we didn't play that way. We went to him a lot, but great guy. And, yeah, he was a guy to me that was the cap of all the others, even the Anthony Peelers, the Doug Smiths. Stipo was the cap.
Coach, an honor to have you on the program. Congratulations on the statue. We wish you luck with your lovely wife, Virginia. We'll talk soon. Thanks so much for your time.
All right, Frank. Nice to talk to you.